For the word of God that is written, the word of God that is within us, and the word of God among us, we give thanks to God. I suppose I should probably start by explaining the title for this sermon. Part of the problem, one of the things I need to explain is that there's an asterisk missing, which would connect it to some footnotes. So, one of the things that I struggle with when I'm writing, well, one of the things I struggle with is actually writing titles, which you can probably tell by this morning's title. But another thing that I struggle with as a writer is maintaining my own voice when I write, because I'm affected by the authors I read. So, for example, when I'm reading Wendell Berry, I use words in my own writing. I use words like reckoning, and I explore issues like what it means to have a sense of place. And when I'm reading Gabriel Garcia Marquez, my sentences get long and there's magic involved. I try to keep my own voice, but just in case, I found it behooves me to read good authors when I'm writing. In the last couple of weeks, I've been reading a book of essays by the late David Foster Wallace. David Foster Wallace writes long, well-constructed sentences that make generous use of footnotes, abbreviations, and random Latin phrases. So being deep into David Foster Wallace, I thought trying to imitate his style while coming up with a name for my yet-to-be-written sermon this week would be hilarious. But of course, I'm probably the only person who gets the joke. My colleague Talitha, who's up with the kids in godly play and can't defend herself, she actually rolled her eyes when I tried to explain the title to her. But the title of this sermon, or more accurately, my tendency to imitate the style of other authors, this is actually a really helpful way to start this morning's sermon, because I want to talk about unconscious imitation and how unconscious imitation can limit our ability to understand the traditions of our faith in general and the contents of the Bible in particular. Now, I want to distinguish here between conscious and unconscious imitation, because when we are intentional about imitation, that can be a really good thing. Intentional imitation is how we learn from our teachers and from the masters whose work we admire. Unconscious imitation, however, makes us like sheep who follow the person ahead of us, unthinkingly going with the flock, uncreative, unimaginative, and unable to grow or change or self-differentiate. And how many of us wants that? Not really. Now, when it comes to reading the Bible, there is among Christians a lot of unconscious imitations. And since this morning's lesson speaks of sheep and of Jesus being like the Good Shepherd, it's worth pointing out that your average church-going Christian's understanding of the intelligence of sheep is a good example of how a lot of us act like sheep, which is to say, it's an example of how we employ unconscious imitation when it really would be better for us to think for ourselves. I'll tell you what. I wish I had a nice bottle of scotch for every time I've heard a preacher or Sunday school teacher or Bible study leader or youth group advisor interpret passages like this morning's lesson from John by talking about the stupidity of sheep. It's almost like clockwork. One of the Bible's several passages that use sheep and shepherding as metaphors will come up, and the jokes about the dim-wittedness of your average you will become a thing of great merriment among the people of God. A few months ago, I heard such a sermon preached, and it was preached by a pastor that I both like and admire, and it was a good sermon. But this time around, the whole sheep are stupid metaphor struck me as the kind of thing that would be said by someone who had exactly no direct experience with sheep. Not that I have any direct experience with sheep, but I am a child of rural Northern California, and my mother grew up on a farm in Iowa, and as such, I've come to recognize urban and suburban ignorance when I see it. Besides, when I heard this sermon, I'd just come home from spending a week on Iona, an island off the west coast of Scotland, where sheep outnumber people by at least a baker's dozen to one. None of the sheep I saw on Iona seemed particularly lacking in intelligence. In fact, if anything, they seemed really well adjusted, and I even saw some sheep solve a problem. What I didn't know is that sheep like to eat seaweed, or at least sheep on Iona like to eat seaweed. And what I saw was, I saw sheep going down onto the beach scrambling over cobbles, dodging waves, to drag long bits of kelp up onto high ground to share with other members of the flock. That seemed kind of smart to me. So after hearing yet another sermon about the stupidity of sheep, I went online and I Googled it. And it turns out that while sheep have a strong herding instinct, which causes them to stay in groups and follow the sheep ahead of them, and sheep are skittish and timid, all of which can make sheep appear a little airheaded, in terms of actual animal IQ, if there is such a thing, the intelligence of sheep ranks below the pig and a little bit above the cow, which is to say that among barnyard animals, their intelligence places them not at the top, but still above average. And one of the reasons that sheep are considered to be smart is that not only can they solve problems, which animal behavioral scientists recognize, but also sheep have apparently have an uncanny ability to recognize faces, the faces of their fellow sheep, and even the faces of humans. And that interspecies recognition is actually noted in this morning's lesson. It turns out that the only thing Jesus says about the behavior of sheep is a comment on how smart they are, because they recognize the face of their shepherd. And yet, when just about every preacher or Sunday school teacher talks about this morning's lesson, what they talk about is how dumb sheep are. And that sounds good, and so we repeat what we've heard, but it's wrong. And the erroneous perception continues because too many of us don't listen to informed voices when we read the Bible or when we attend to the work of faith formation. When we read passages about sheep, we listen to preachers who grew up in the suburbs rather than to farmers or to animal scientists who might actually know a thing or two about what they're talking about. And of course, it's not that big of a deal. I'm pretty sure the sheep themselves don't really care what we think about them. The problem is that we do the same thing with the Bible in situations that really do matter. For far too long, Christians have read the Bible's passages that talk about women, and then they've asked men to guide them in their understanding of what the passages have to say. We've read the Bible's words about homosexuality, and we've silenced the voices of gay men and lesbians. The rich have informed our ideas about what the Bible has to say about the poor, and the powerful have told us what to think about those living on the societal margins. And it's a depressing fact that many, if not most, Christians' opinions about Judaism are based on things said in the Gospels, things that are 2,000 years old and don't have anything to do with Jewish religion as it has become after centuries of evolution. All this because too few Christians actually go out and talk to Jewish people. And it's not just Christians who do this. A lot of people who despise religion don't actually have much experience with religion. They don't know people of faith. They don't ask questions about what we believe or how we practice spirituality. And as a result, when the secular press wants to include a Christian voice or point of view, they talk to someone who fits the stereotype of Christians as being white and male, theologically and politically somewhat to the right of Napoleon Bonaparte, socially just a little more awkward than Napoleon Dynamite. So this is a human problem, and not just a problem for people of faith. But as people of faith, we can change. We can ask more questions. We can listen more when unfamiliar voices speak. We can learn more. We needn't simply follow the crowd. We can think for ourselves, and we can allow our spiritual lives to be formed and informed by those whose voices traditionally have been ignored, silenced, disregarded, or all three. And when we do, I suspect we will find ourselves behaving not so much like the sheep of common stereotype, a bunch of followers who look the same, act the same, and go wherever they are led, but we will be like sheep as sheep actually are. We'll be smart enough to recognize Christ. And having seen the divine, We will follow as God leads us into green pastures of peace and beside still waters of joy.